Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Save on your next oil change at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Choose Castrol Edge Full Synthetic Motor Oil to provide maximum performance and protection for your engine. Get a $15 gift card after rebate when you buy 5 quarts of Castrol Edge for $34.95. Plus, 2 times O Rewards points. Offer valid in-store and online at O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Knowing ball is the projection. The Sims are in his head. Last time Utikau joined Lulz, he dropped some gems, and today we're going to catch up with him, see what it's like dipping his toes into the content streets, what he has been working on this past year and a half or so since we last talked. I'm Pete with Brick on Lulz with one of our all-time favorite guests, Utikau.
Does he think... He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in 1 for yes, 2 for no, and let the DFS cats pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right. We now have Utikau back on the show. The first time as a member, a founding member of the In-Game Syndicate. Welcome back to Lulz, Utikau.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. It's and you know, I mean, before you started doing In-Game Syndicate, I mean, you had done a Roto Grinders interview. You did one with Levitan, popped up in the ETR Discord. But before In-Game, you kept a pretty low profile as far as doing content.
Yeah, that's right. I'd say so. I would say the Levitan one is actually really the first thing I truly did, because it was like live media. The Grinders one, that was probably like 8 years before all of that. And I'm not even sure why I hopped onto that, but profile. I think it was just to get a name out in case I wanted to like find a job later. That's how early it was, you know?
That's right. Brian, how are you doing? Very chilly there in parts unknown near the lake.
It's cold, Pete. It's ice cold. I'm at my limit at this point in my life of the cold. When I was younger, like, you know, when you're 13, 14, you go ice skating, all that type of stuff. It's all fun. Now I got like a month and a half in me, and now I'm over it. I'm well over it.
Did you maybe consider buying a lake house near Lake Michigan? Yeah, maybe somewhere more temperate.
I have. You can buy a second house, Pete. So
okay,
but then you'd have to travel there. So I don't know about that. What is your take on winter, Pete? Since you grew up, Denver's not as cold as Chicago. I think it's about a little warmer, but it's much more snowy. So how do you feel?
Oh, no, I mean, I hate it. You know, if I didn't fall in love with a girl who was from the East Coast, I would definitely be living in San Diego or somewhere warm. So, I hate winters. It's brutal. Okay. Yuta, if you don't mind doxing yourself, what part of the country are you in?
I'm in Manhattan.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
I did grow up in Illinois, so I'm familiar.
Oh, really?
With the brick streets.
Where do you self-identify? Because, you know, we've talked about like regional DFS competition, Chicago, you know, a lot of heavy hitters. We got Brick, we got Osimo, we got the Chipotle brothers, last I knew of. Do you self-identify as a Chicago DFS player because of your roots, or are you Manhattan? Are you riding with Team New York?
No, I left too early for those to be the roots. I've been East Coast for most of my life.
Mm. Okay. All right. Sounds good. What, yeah.
We had a whole show on what age you actually can become a fan of a team and not become a fan because of the Big Cat controversy. What's your take on that? How many years can you live somewhere where you're like, I'm a true fan?
I think we got to go with this, just like raw time, like half your life.
Okay.
Like if you're 30 years old and you move somewhere when you're like 15, I think you could pick a side by then.
I think Big Cat's got a few more years if we go by the
okay. All the stoolies, get out of his mansions. Right. Stop being so mad at him. He's got some time. What do you have any laundry bro tendencies, Yuta? Are there any teams
anymore?
You root for?
No. I used to like because I was growing up Jordan Bowles.
Yeah.
A couple hopeful Cubs years. So White Sox actually won a title when I was out there. So
what was that?
If you remember that,
Brian. I mean, that was like 2001?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I went to one of those playoff games.
Yeah.
Or maybe two. They signed Canseco. That was my favorite player growing up. Right around that period, too. It was like one of his last stops. Oh, it was good times, good times. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, was it fantasy sports that kind of ruined your traditional fandom, or was it just growing up?
I think it happened a little prior. I just got a little jaded about the business of sports. Sort of from the aspect of the assumption that these owners probably don't really care about the fans too much. Or to an extent they do. I think every ownership is different, but for a lot of segments of it, it does feel like true business.
Mine was, it wasn't the players moving so much, although that was like when I was younger, that was really starting to get popular because in the 80s and stuff, it was still pretty rare for players to move teams, 70s, 80s. It was the steroid era, not because they were doing steroids. I'm fine with that, and that's great. More homers, who gives a shit? You know, if they want to do it, they know the risks. It was the coverage was so phony, and even though I was young, I was like, these reporters didn't know, you know, that McGuire and Canseco were juicing in the bathroom. Like, give me a, and the coaches didn't know, and the GMs weren't like thinking about, like, oh man, he juiced up pretty big last year. Yeah, Benito Santiago couldn't hit like more than three homers at 26 years old, but you know, he's jacking 30 when he's 39. They're not putting two and two together. These guys, give me a fucking, they all fucking knew. It was a huge fucking lie. And that started for me.
Yeah.
You go
I'm not that old, but I just imagine like the purity of sport was a lot more present, I think, in the 80s and 90s. And now we think, you know, stuff became a little more manufactured, a little more, it's harder to like fall in love with the product from like that emotional side. And even like gambling is definitely encroaching on that a lot, right? Where you're less tied from a pure fandom standpoint, and you're just tied to what you want to happen for your bets.
That makes a ton of sense too, in that you think even before like the gambling fantasy side, there are a lot of reasons people like following the NFL or the NBA now is just because of all of the off-court drama, the reality TV show element of it. It's almost like the derivatives markets for these sports, gambling, fantasy, reality TV, entertainment, the podcast talking about the game is more interesting to like the average young consumer of the sport than, like you said, the sport itself. Where you take the 80s, early 90s, you know, other than me watching, like, what was it, Ahmad Rashad, you know, inside the NBA or whatever, like a little bit of that. It was like, no, you just watched the game. That was your relationship to the sport, was the game and the box scores.
Exactly.
I've been thinking about this, this idea. God, I'm trying to, because I think we're three different age ranges here, maybe. Maybe you guys are closer. But when I was growing up, SportsCenter was just like huge. It was the best show. Even Baseball Tonight was awesome. It was a great show with Peter Gammons. And who was hosting that? Brian Kenny or somebody. Anyways, basically I got into, so like baseball was my first love, and then football, and then basketball, and then hockey got in there somewhere. And like, but you had no choice just because everything was so homogenous that like the culturally speaking, like me and Pete have talked about this over the years. Back then, everyone kind of was into the same things, and there was no micro niche media like we have now. And so like you learned about NASCAR, even if you didn't want to. Like I can name 20, 30 NASCAR guys from that era probably right now if I was really put to the test. Like I can't now because I don't pay attention at all, but you were forced to like get into, and I think this was one of their plays on starting the WNBA too. They're like, we just force feed it on SportsCenter, and then people are eventually going to learn about it and they're going to like it. And they don't have, and it doesn't work that way anymore. Cause if you like the football, if you like the Bears, you can now get 24 hours of niche Bears content just on the Bears at any moment, anytime, And SportsCenter has been a dog shit show for about two decades. No one watches it anymore, I'm assuming. And it's kind of killing a lot of the ratings, except football seems to be doing fairly decent. But basketball's really down. MLB's not doing great. And I think that's a big part of it, is this niche media drawing away the attention and the change in the culture.
Sure. I mean, you would know, you guys, right, as drivers of the most niche of media in the space, that there's the content out there is just whatever you want to listen to. It's out there.
And it affects us too, right? Like, I mean, just like in our small little world, there's less people who might play baseball now, this coming up, right? We got two more months. And if it was, and I think part of the reason there's no DraftKings content is also that if this was, you know, 1998, like there'd be the Madden bus, there'd be the DFS bus, you know, you'd be a lot more popular probably, you know, because they could push it easier. And then every sport would be, you know, in your face, because it's all on SportsCenter. It's all you're forced to ingest every sport. At least it was back then. I bet some people have no idea what I'm talking about. Pete, you remember? You're old enough to remember.
Wow.
What SportsCenter was. You're fake young. You remember when SportsCenter was great?
Of course. That what is your media diet these days, Yuta? Like, I know these podcasts aren't around, but you strike me as someone who might enjoy listening to, you know, like a Rob or who would it be, like a Zach Lowe NBA podcast, a JJ Redick, you know, podcast before he started coaching. Do you like the X's and O's media type content?
Yeah, I haven't listened to those in particular. I mentioned before that I listened to the Nate Duncan from NBA. Oh, yeah. Some of the Fangraph guys I've listened to, and for the DFS, I'll run a couple hours of the ETR content on a Saturday to catch up. So a little bit here and there, but, just whatever I need to fill in or stay on top of whatever the information is. But I don't think I am religiously, you know, taking in the media. It's just whatever I need to, I kind of get by on the bare minimum. In a lot of aspects.
And I feel like that might surprise people because, you know, now that people have heard you talk and, you know, seeing you talk about your process a little bit more, you know, you as a ball knower, I think people would assume that you were trying to take in all of these various data points to factor into that soft skill ball knowledge. So that might surprise people that you're not doing more of that.
Yeah. It's just a law. I've watched too many hours of the stuff. So over time, I don't really feel the need to necessarily stay on top of the most live media, because I can sort of just update my priors a little bit rather than try to form opinions listening to others.
Yeah.
Stump the Schwab. I'm sorry. The comments got me.
Yeah, but once you guys you get Brian going down this nostalgia rabbit hole,
oh yeah,
we'll never get back. What's it been like this first full you know, year of doing content? Has it felt like a muscle that you have to work to get in the rhythm of it, or is it coming naturally to you? What's that been like?
The podcast for sure didn't really necessarily come that easy. I don't even know if it's there now, but as far as making my own videos, I've never really, it's been rather seamless, because I sort of just put out what I feel like doing in that moment and just hope that our subs sort of gravitate around it. And I've released a variety of different types of videos, and going between even showing actually screen shares of my actual process on a given day, as well as lineup reviews. In general, just videos of only sports specific takes or only sports specific processes that I would go through. So it's just, it's mostly just snapshots of what I do anyway. So it doesn't really feel difficult or a transition in any form. I just sort of hope that the viewers can get something out of it.
what have you gotten the best feedback on it? You know, you mentioned trying out a lot of different style videos. What do you find the in-game syndicate subs wanting more of?
We have subs that are probably geared more towards the side of sophisticated and like already actively simming or like having their own stuff. So I'm assuming my value add to them has mostly been on the side of integrating some types of ball knowledge where they can actually apply it in their own processes. Like maybe I'm sure like plenty of users have taken like some snippets of things that I've said, because like I can't really assist them in like the sim side of things. But just like it's all rather like a spectrum of things that you can add, and everybody can, I think, be able to get a little bit from what I say and add it to their own toolbox. And that's sort of the whole goal of our site, right? That we want to have people reach the optimal version of their own process.
I have the numbers here too, actually. Well, and also I would say his Discord is probably the most active, looks like to me, like his channel. Utical's MLB projection inefficiencies and generating MLB lineups with Utical and Shit My Money were the top two viewed of all his videos so far, his solo videos.
We do
videos together, right? Too.
So like the projection inefficiencies one was like everyone has access to some projections. That whole video is just about how they could be fragile in certain spots and how you can manually adjust it directionally right when you encounter those. So it's like kind of a small thing, but to the right person, it could be pretty valuable.
Well, I could probably assume too why that's so popular, right? It's because most people aren't making their own projections. They're using other projections and then wanting to understand, you know, I always get worried with like tweaking projections of like the butterfly trickle down effect of like, well, shit, what do I need to be adjusting if I make this adjustment? So it makes sense that people would be like, wait, right, is there a smart way that I can actually do this where I don't have to do 98% of the initial legwork?
Right. If you spend any amount of time, you might as and you're not generating your own, you might as well be generating your own in the form of tweaking someone else's. And so the whole purpose of that was to uncover ways that they're probably not, you know, accounting for entirely. And then you just have a directionally accurate new number that's your own.
How do you feel? You know, we always kind of talk about on the show, like the field getting sharper and sharper. Obviously, you guys have created a content site that is making a lot of players way better. Do you feel like your edge in these games is diminishing these days? Or where do you feel about your play right now?
Yeah, I feel like the edge is diminishing, but that's sort of inevitable, whether I'm contributing to it or not. It's rather unavoidable. If no content sites existed, it would still, like, bots would come in. There's like AI, someone out there is generating something more efficient. It's just bound to happen. This is like a 12-year-old old industry now. At a certain point, there's probably less financial incentive to come in and try. And I think we're actually reaching that around now. It's always going to go down over time, but I think the rate at which the edge diminishes also goes down over time.
Just kind of a thought of experiment as he was talking, I was thinking, even if there was no content sites period and players didn't like continually get better, it still would go like that way because the best players would extract money. Whoever the best players were at the time would extract money from the worst players, and then it would shrink the pool. So like they would have to, like, unless there was some other outside force, like a bunch of marketing money or something. But we just did, I don't know if you saw, you know, me and Dan just did a video on Endgame yesterday, where Dan did a study over the last 3 years, 2022 to 2024 MLB, flagship contest, Pete, and the ROI that you could expect to get and he broke it down into like three different categories. So winning lineups, losing lineups to the rake, and the lineups in between that will beat the rake, but not by more than all the rake. So there's like this kind of middling level of groups. And so it has gone, even in these 3 years, the way you would think it has. It's grown more efficient. And we sliced and diced it a bunch of different ways because it's really pretty complicated to look at this. But it's not as much as you would think, at least in MLB. But it is a trend. One of the things that makes it kind of hard is the sizes of the tournaments have also gotten smaller. So like the amount of middling players is like very close to the same as 2022.
Really?
Well, just the percentage.
Yeah.
Percentage wise. The percentage wise of all three groups is pretty similar. But the size of the tournaments has gotten smaller. And so like just net ROI available has dropped by, I think it was like 25%. So it was like, there was like 22% ROI available on average in 2022. And I think it was 13 or something. You have to go watch the video, get all the numbers. And
I haven't seen it yet. So is that the main takeaway, that just like fewer dead lineups then? Like truly dead lineups?
No, it wasn't. It was, I mean, they were just, he didn't count the number of dead lineups. He counted the number of lineups that were negative, that were paying the rake and losing. Those would be considered negative lineups or negative ROI lineups. And so he did it in a percentage of the field and then total amount. And then we added some stuff and talked about it for about an hour, actually. It's interesting to look at the numbers and think about it. And we're probably going to do a follow-up after everyone watches it and then wants some more questions answered. And he might put 2001 in there because I was telling him, I'm like, well, if you think about 2022, that's pretty much when all the sims started, right? That's about that time, wasn't it, Pete? And yeah. So you kind of see this weird bump in his graph around there. And I'm like, I wonder if that's when the sims came in. And if so, that kind of time period's kind of hard to see what was happening. It's like one hypothesis is like the good players are the same player group. They're just now using sims. So they were winning before, but now they're using sims. And the phone shitter bros are still phone shitter bros. The floor has been raised still, just like, you know, it looks like the floor has been raised. This was our big concern kind of when we first started this show, because even projections were fairly new in 2020. But it raised, the concern was it's just going to raise the floor. Like how, you know, like they won't be able to put a donkey lineup once they start getting all these tools for cheap or for free or whatever. You know, free access to optimizers and things like that. But I think you have to go back to like 2018 to see the full 2017 to see the full picture. But I think, not everyone's gonna be able to pay for our content. And I think the moral of it was, if you're winning, you could still keep playing, try to get better. If you're middling, you have to do something to get up there. And if like you want to make this career, you better be like really smart and get obsessed about stuff, you know, and have you ever beaten anything in your life? Cause it's going to be tough.
Yeah. And I mean, Don here is a subscriber, said that video made me confident I could realize my edge. There's still bad players at the same rate and the contests are smaller. So maybe fewer dominating lineups. You know, I got a question in the Lulz channel in the Deposit Kingdom Discord that kind of dovetails with this. It was from Sacrilegious. He said, if you had no projection edge, do you think you would still have an edge in other aspects large enough to beat the rake?
If I knew I didn't have a projection edge, I would use sims. So now if we just say that's not available to me, I would say yes, but it's just rather small because it's now we're only talking about game theory and construction. Mm-hmm. It's not as much of an edge as the projection edge would be.
And so I guess to precede that question, the projection edge in your mind, that's still your single biggest edge in DFS?
It's definitely still the single biggest edge you can have for anyone, I would assume. To an extent, sims can be pretty powerful, just like having solid projections. But once that part of the market gets a little too crowded, there's diminishing returns on those too, unless you have a really unique sim. But I think to anyone's process, having good projections and knowing like the inputs into them, I imagine should still be the biggest edge, because you're still trying to predict the game and you're trying to realize the truth, and that's really what the projection gets at.
It drives everything else. So if he has better projections, he's going to get closer to the right answer. I mean, you just want to know what the answer is. What's the right. closest to
and
the
then
answer?
A big value of me having my projections is then I can compare it to the industry stuff. And the industry stuff is frequently, for the most part, going to be really solid. But in the certain spots it's not, it just becomes a tremendous edge.
Because of the hoarding effect of everyone else using those projections?
Right. Because you can get like the ownership from there. And it might be only 10% of slates, but I could just be really exploitative and just do that and have an edge.
Hmm. This is also similar to the concept of the flaws in a lot of sim products, where if they're wrong on the field guess, well, then your sim's going to be wrong. And not only your sim's going to be wrong, a whole bunch of people's sim's going to be wrong who use the same product. You know, like they think there's 9 lineups of LeBron when there's actually 150 or something, you know.
Do you, because as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, like a lot of what you're doing in not using a sim is you're, you know, kind of trying to bully an optimizer to essentially do sim-like things, but you're essentially doing it all on your own. Is that still an incredibly time-intensive process for you on a given slate, or is it kind of templated in a way that you can expedite it?
It's incredibly time-intensive. It's like hours of rules for NFL and tweaking. It's actually kind of hacky how I do like the portfolio stuff, because I'm not even doing it in a way that is optimal. I'm just landing on what I'm trying to land on, and for no particular reason, just because I think it's right. And I need to like diversify my exposures for like certain setups.
Do you ever have concerns with that? Like, you know, I'm thinking about now, like you listen to so much content around AI and it's just like everything that's time intensive is going to get eaten up. You know, someone's going to find a way to do what you do faster, better, more efficient. Like, do you feel like what you do is just so unique that like you don't ever have to find ways to streamline it more or find ways to shortcut it? Or like, is there or are you just going to always have to do it the way you do it?
I mean, I prefer to do it this way. And I'm also uniquely wrong in how I do things fairly often too. And that's not good, but, I just need to be right more than I'm wrong. And that's the edge. And as long as it's unique is still rather good.
So then when In-Game Syndicate acquires Run the Sims, and a lot of this is now going to be, you know, a product you guys are incorporating into content for your subs, Nerdy and Brick, and you guys are going to be, you know, tweaking stuff behind the scenes. Do you just have no excitement for this? Cause you're like, I don't use Sims. Like I don't need this. Like where do you fall on that spectrum of how does what In-Game Syndicate's doing kind of dovetail with your process and your content?
I'm fairly certain we can revamp it to the point where I will use it in my process for the tools that we do put out. And we're only going to put out things when it's, you know, exceedingly ready to be used from the public. So you'll see me use the tools, and hopefully we can get it to a spot where I can do everything I need to do as well.
Yeah. And I assume, like, yeah, is there a part of you that are like, man, this time intensive process with all of these rules and stuff, if I were able to port this over to a sim or something like that and reduce my time, you know, to 20 minutes a slate, like, is that a problem you're actually interested in solving?
No, I think the whole like process of making these rules for me actually allows me to maintain the edge, because it's sort of reinforcing the concepts that I've always done, and I can always adjust them because I'm still going to watch the games. I can still adjust them if I see things differently. So it allows me to stay fluid. It keeps me engaged. I have no desire really to cut the man hours really, other than the extent of like how engaged I am. Like the hours I put in is still down over time, but it's just because I don't feel the need, or like I'm not nearly as motivated as I was 5 years ago.
That makes sense. We got Nerdy in the chat. There's often an asymmetry with getting different. Being wrong might cost you X, but being right wins you 5X. Is that kind of a good summary of how you feel about kind of your unique approach?
Yeah, there'll be randomly slates where like there's heavy dupes in like two game or showdown, where like I feel like a lineup through my process I reached was fairly obvious, but then it's not even duped in certain contests. And I encountered this, I think I mentioned it in like one of our roundtables, where there was a lineup I used in like some contest that won like the Wildcat. And I thought, because like the Wildcat is like a $300 contest, I thought that it was a little too chalky to be in like the $20 flagship. And then I look in the $20 flagship, it was used one time and it got like second in there. So I have no idea, like, there's some circumstance where I have no idea what my version of chalk is. And in that scenario, actually, my assumption of what's chalk and like what the field was so off that what I thought was contrarian or chalk was actually rather contrarian. It kind of works both ways. But like Nerdy is saying, in the circumstance where like I actually land on that team, it like makes the threshold in like the flagship and runs, and I'm able to run that, the one time I happen to win that is actually much more rewarding than the five times I'm going to be solo wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Brian, I was going to ask you a question when Yuta was talking about like comparing different projection sources and stuff. Would it be a realistic math problem to engineer which projection sources are actually the biggest market drivers? Like, would you be able to pull enough signal in of like ETR influences the market this much, stochastic this much? Like, would that even be something you could kind of solve?
Yeah, I think you could. I mean, within a given error rate, but yeah, I think you could see some effects. Yeah.
And then I guess
you like time when it was dropped and stuff. It depends on the sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you could.
Because I'm just wondering you to, because it does sound like you're comparing other stuff. And then I'm assuming once you make your own stuff, then you are looking at some of those other sources and then being like, oh, they're on the same thing I'm on. Maybe I don't go as hard there, but they're not on this thing I'm on. That's where I'm going to push my chips in. Is that a fair characterization?
For NFL, like 80% of the time they're on the same things I'm on. So it's from there, it just becomes a combinatorial exercise. And then the rest, the other times, it's just, I just sort of jam in the exploitative stuff. But that's sort of what I mean, though. Like most of the time they're right enough, and I can't really have that projection edge, at least for NFL.
Yeah. It's interesting too. I think it was just the other day, Levitan tweeted out kind of the improvement in their projection, you know, looking at the R squared, like over the years and how much money they've been investing into their projection team, their data scientists, all of that stuff, like with the singular goal of making our projections better. And I'm sure every site out there would like to say they're making their projections better, but they seem like the one, you know, site that is demonstrably like proving that and investing significant amount of money into that enterprise? I don't know if I have a question there, but like, how does that make you feel about your own process of essentially trying to have the best projections out there?
Well, their improvement is real, and I can tell that they've gotten better. I can feel that they've gotten better. There's sort of no denying it. And that's just because it's sort of what we've been reinforcing. It's that the machines get better at doing the same thing when you increase the sample over time. For me, there's nothing really I can do other than maybe sort of hope that drives more subscribers to ETR, and then I can sort of cash in a little bit more when they happen to be wrong, even if they are wrong less frequently.
What was their arc, Pete? I didn't see that tweet for some reason. Did it get better and better? Like, significantly better?
They've been improved it each year. Yeah.
Okay. It wouldn't shock me, honestly. Not in that I'm not making ETR is great, but like if it was like even or something, because and Levitan's like, we're spending all this money and it's even, you know, like because it's that hard of a problem. But that's interesting. So it is improving it year over year. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And Don said I could pull it up later. I'll post it in the Discord later. But yeah, it was by position as well. He had even had some fun stuff on like the players that they tended to overproject or underproject this year. And I've heard him reference on a pod as well. Like they even made some tweaks this year that they were overprojecting guys with Q tags, I believe in NFL, and clearly not kind of factoring in some of that stuff there. So, I mean, when you think of all the like hyper specific ways that projections are fragile, and then like the research and data that would need to go into teasing that out, it literally starts to feel infinite in the ways you can improve that.
The conundrum too is if they do like some take a Yuta stance on a Q tag where they just go, this, I don't think this guy's playing, I'm just going to put him at zero and then put this guy in place of him. You might piss off 1,000 subs, you know, if you start taking those stands. So, or like their tweaks in their sims or how they're going to do things, or, you know, ownership, maybe like going out of the box on ownership, you know? So I don't know, being big might have its problems. Like being popular might have its problems with handling that.
So, you know, when you mentioned being exploitative, do you think there would be more value in trying to exploit a specific set of projections, say like, I know the ETR subs are going to play this way, versus like, say, aggregating ownership projections across the industry and be like, this is generally what everyone's going to be doing?
So this might sound a little crazy, but like the smaller the field is, I can identify who subs to what, and I can sort of tailor a team to that. But that's getting pretty granular, so it's only worth it at the higher stakes. But when it's like a 10 or 20 man, I already know how like the majority of this field is going to play just based on observing, because most of these guys have already been playing for years. So that helps me like stay ahead in high stakes. Obviously, as the field size grows, there's less you can do with that. But like I do try to observe what sort of trends are happening as far as like macro, like QB stacking, just like things in general. How I can get different within a stack. I would say 2 years ago, there are certain aspects of like defense that was not being done well, but like things have shored up for sure with the sim stuff.
I'm trying to picture that process of, okay, I know these guys are in this 10 man, they're going to play this. So then who do I play? Like, do you get your lineups in Fantasy Cruncher and then tailor them to that specific 10 man?
Yeah, I kind of break it down by like small field, small-ish field, and then like medium, and then large is its own thing.
Do you have like your own, because what you're basically describing is like a HUD for your opponents. Like, do you have a profile?
I mean, I'll say that like my team for like the 4-man and like a 15-man, it's not going to be the same, because the 4-man, you really know what the scouting report is. Mm. And then the 15, you kind of know, right? But like less certainty, but still like rather certain, because you know what they're sub to, you know the style, whether they can play or not, that sort of thing.
And when you say you know what they're sub to, is that because it's like publicly available information or from reviewing their lineups over and over?
Well, you would know within like two slates what the projection source is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they're always taking Patrick Rodgers in golf or something. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was talking about NFL, but yeah, same idea. Yeah.
That's the most obvious one I could think of, the ETR. Every time you plug in ETR's PGA projections, you're getting Patrick Rodgers. Oh, they used to anyways.
What sports are you playing right now regularly?
Nothing really. I've been in and out of NBA, and I started getting into golf recently. So we have like the NBA Live final coming next month, so I'll probably just ramp up for that. And then like I've been dialing back the NBA just because it's so labor intensive.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, when we were on the topic of HUDs, do you guys think, because me and Dan were talking about it in the video, that there is like Shark Scope, or you guys remember all these poker tracker, these poker tools where you can analyze your opponents before sitting at the table? Table Ninja, there's some other ones. So like in the poker days, it would be like, oh, this table is, you know, five Utica's, right? It's like, I'm not sitting at that table, right? And then you go to this one, and it's like, oh, there's a brick 75 Peter Overzet. We got to sit at that with those two donkeys, right? So do you think there's that, there's the those tools? Do you think anyone's making that stuff, like where they're analyzing the lobby?
I'm not sure anyone's, that tool exists, but that type of player exists, and they're probably a good player. Game selections matters quite a lot.
Yeah. There's no game selection, publicly available game selection tools yet. Maybe the poker players are all retired now, but that seems like so obvious, something to – I'm not sure DraftKings would allow it, but wouldn't surprise me if someone's doing something like that. A corollary that we talked about too would be like as the games get more and more efficient, there might just be specific days you don't want to play, specific you know, types of formats you don't want to play, you know, and pick your spots more as it, you know, not that you wouldn't have an edge, but like as your edge shrinks, your risk increases, and we're already in the riskiest gambling there is, basically skill-based gambling there is. So you'd want to minimize that image, but just don't play that. So like, that's another tool maybe possibly that, somebody might be doing or you see down the road. The whole pool for these type of tools, as we talk about in our private endgame chat, there's not a ton of dudes, Pete. I think there's not a ton of dudes for these sophisticated tools that actually help you. But out of the people who like us, I think might want them.
Yeah, I do think it starts to become an interesting thing, and we've talked about this before with projections of like the if ETR has the best projections or Xsite has the best sim or whatever, where it's like that might be the case, but is it actually setting you back because so many other people are using the same projections, the same sim? It kind of goes back to what Yuta is essentially saying of like you have to find a way to tweak those or approach it from a different angle if you want them to actually be useful for you.
Yeah.
If you forced me to use the most industry of projections, I could still get different enough in the construction. It's just that I have one less lever to pull. That's sort of like the other question was. It's still doable, but just more decisions you're available to you, the more sort of an edge you can grind out. And
so when you say you're getting into golf, I assume like you're kind of looking, you start looking at projections, you're trying to figure out where the inefficiencies might be. Like how do you even start when you are kind of, you know, ramping up your play in a newer sport for yourself?
Well, I've been playing golf for some time. I was just saying I was getting into it for this season.
Oh, gotcha.
But no, I don't really have a projection edge, which is why I don't really sit like cash games for those. Like, I just don't think I'm, the edge is really strong enough, but like it eliminates that. But like I said, that's a good example where I think I still have an edge there. It's just in the construction. It's in like the ownership stuff. It's in the combinations. Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's why the edge isn't going to be as big, in my opinion.
The rare weather opportunities, if you actually believe the weathermen are right, and it, or you can guess.
Like I'll have my player takes, but it's so small compared to the other sports.
Yeah,
combos is huge in PGA.
I assume, do you feel similarly about MMA? Do you play that at all?
No, I don't do MMA.
Okay. Just again, because it's so less projection based and way more kind of like game theory and leveraging the field.
Yeah, I imagine it's just like, it's to an extent going to be like the golf.
Yeah. But you're just such a degen that you can't help yourself dabbling in golf.
Oh, I'm more than dabble. I've been solid in golf for some time now.
Nice. It seems like in the in-game syndicate, you do have your own war room channel. There's been some fun stuff that pops up in there. It ended up being more eclectic than I thought. You know, you get a little NFT combo, Pudgy Penguins. You had some like interesting angles for the Super Bowl bets where you were kind of inferring you had some inside sources. Where did that all come from?
I can't disclose those. But there was the previous year, basically one of the books screwed up like limits or whatever, and I had a good source on Gatorade color. And so I was able to get down way more than I should have on Gatorade. This year, the limits were absolute dust. And not only that, I didn't get the same level of information. So, but yeah, there's been a lot of like my random sort of musings, or like once in a while I'll have some picks or like some actual actionable bets in there. Like there was a while I was posting like NFL bets. I think they did pretty well actually. And if the subs were in there, if the subs were following in there, I was on Eagles like the day after the conference championship, and it was like plus 120, plus 115. That number actually grinded down. So there's stuff. There's definitely alpha in there.
Is it, you know, before you started doing the in-game syndicate stuff, did you have anyone else that you kind of like bounced ideas off of, had like a think tank, or have you kind of been like a lone wolf, you know, previously?
Mostly the lone wolf. Yeah, just that. Like it's helpful to bounce ideas off of people here and there, but I mean, I don't really find a terribly unique perspective frequently. Or like at least one that like I side with.
He tells me that daily, by the way, Pete.
Every time you get one of your opinions.
Not unique. Like, hanging up. He leaves the call. He also lets people sleep on his couch, I think, occasionally. He lets some DSR. Right.
Wait, who is this?
This guy recently, RS Bathla, has been doing really well. Like he's actually breaking out, I think, this year. He like quit his job and like started banking everything. But
yeah, he quit his job and then banked like the next like 2 days after he quit, something like that.
Yeah, he won like a $20 million maker, and I think like a high stakes one in the Super Bowl actually.
Okay.
Like he was like 0.2% to win that one. It was like he needed the Worthy Bomb and the Hopkins too. But anyway, like he approached me like 8 years ago, basically, through like a mutual from like my college. And basically I was already like getting big at the time. He was like, yeah, I like what you're doing. Can I like learn from you? And like I've been sort of like guiding him. I was like guiding him sometime throughout like the decade. And like he gets a job and has like a 2 million in winnings.
And I assume that the crashing on your couch, this was more 8 years ago than
this was 8 years ago, because like we would have the all nighter. So like there was no point for him to like take the train back to like New Jersey or whatever.
Wow. I bet a lot of people would kill for that. Getting you know, that's the real in-game syndicate. You know, the Crash and Yuta's couch, getting one-on-one coaching.
What's it was a real Landry Fields insanity situation.
It never hurts to ask, I guess, huh?
There you go.
You're gonna have somebody. Somebody's gonna be sleeping on that.
I guess I'm the Landry Fields here.
I think no, Brick. To me, I think you're the prime candidate of all of us. Now you got this. You got this lake house. Do you still got the hot tub?
Yeah, but Yuta's way nicer than me. So
who's more?
Someone called me from Northern Illinois. I'm like, yeah, that's great, pal.
Who's more likely to close down Buffalo Wild Wings drinking Long Island iced teas, though?
I could do that. I mean, if they let me.
I like this, the Yuta couch. Yuta, do you drink alcohol? Do you have any vices other than gambling?
I drink.
Is that a glass of wine right now, or is that just water out of a fancy glass?
Just water, but
okay.
More than I would like to have. You'll have to ask the live final guys, I guess.
Okay. I assume that it would strike me that it would be hard not to drink in Manhattan. It feels like a lot of social activities are centered around nice dinners and bars and all of that.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty out here. I would say I probably was partaking a lot more before. So I don't know. Could be time for me to get out of here.
How old are you?
35.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, even at, so what, yeah, you were
another 5 years left in, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I can feel myself getting dumber.
Daniels wants to know, what time do you begin your DFS day? Yeah, with these time intensive processes, what time does it start?
It's not much anymore. Used to be like for the main sports, MLB, NBA would be like 4 or something. These days I'll push it to like after 5, sometimes 6. So it's really before in NBA specifically, I've transitioned from projections from scratch to actually taking ETR and adjusting. So you can take that for what you want. I think that's just enough to get by. And I can put in half the time and still get like 90-something% of the right number.
Well, that kind of goes back to my first question of like trying to find some possible shortcuts to your process. And it does seem like there are some of those concessions that you are willing to make.
Yeah, as long as you're clear that and knowing that you are making concessions. Well, I mean, at least if you're good, you're making concessions. If you don't know what you're doing, actually, it doesn't really matter. Like how long you're spending, you might as well just, sort of focus on construction, but I think grinding out edges is just that. It's very time intensive.
What gets you most excited about anything DFS related right now, whether it's the business side with in-game, just still getting into the slate specific stuff, you know, working on finding inefficiencies, like what jazzes you up right now?
I think just the business side now, or like, you know, talking to the people, really. I don't really feel like there's anything left for me as far as like trying to win contests. Like there's still a rush of like, you know, the rush of winning getting the first. But it's not necessarily the same. So it's just, you know, getting to like help out the people a little bit, getting to know the community. I've met plenty of good guys in my time at Endgame already.
And some people might hear stuff like that, and you know, it's, you know, it almost sounds cliche, you know, getting to talk to people or getting, but there is an element of DFS where if you have been a lone wolf, where some of that stuff starts to feel like there's something more there, or a little bit unsatisfying in a way, like being more forward facing, having this group of people like can imbue it with more meaning. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. Like there's no real reason I should like give picks or like shill ideas specific to like stuff that isn't evergreen, but I'll still do that on occasion just to like have that camaraderie. But aside from that, truly my time spent on DFS in particular has really just been funneled to other stuff. Like I've been getting into like the like sports betting, like trading, art, just things that are, I can use like similar skills to evaluate, but not necessarily doing the same things over and over.
Did you buy any TMath coin, Taylor Mathis coin? Are you in the meme coin streets?
I mostly avoided that. I did see Trump at like 4, but I didn't pull the trigger. So that was a bit of a loss, but I like longed like a bunch of Solana on that though. So it was like the second level play for that.
So it sounds like if you're in that, you know, if you're longing Solana and that stuff, you got your finger on the pulse of kind of what's going on in crypto on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. It's not pretty right now, but so we're just gonna have to wait it out.
Yeah. Do you think does crypto, you know, right now of all the different kind of, you know, speculating stuff you're doing, you mentioned sports betting, obviously DFS, business, like, does that still offer the most upside, just what you can make in crypto?
It just offers the most liquidity. I wouldn't say it offers upside, offers the most downside. I assume my edge there isn't really the same as DFS. So I have like much stricter guardrails for those. I've always been pretty into like the PvP type of games.
Yeah. And I mean, aren't the meme coins becoming increasingly, you know, PvP at this point? Like it's,
I'm not sure. I think it's PV Insider.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I saw some comments about that recently about, yeah, how the insiders are, it's tough to, the insider is essentially the rake in the meme coin game. And it's getting like really hard to beat the rake in that regard.
It's like every coin, it's like, it's on slot machine, except they're all rigged with, except the slot machine has the rake and it has an insider. So it's very unbeatable, I would say, for anybody.
Brian, you had a, you know, I was trying to segue us naturally to Taylor Mathis conversation.
We gotta talk about this tweet before we go. Okay. There.
I'll try to pull this up. You set this up as I get this up. What's
well, the idea was we were going to talk about this tweet and then maybe talk about like touting and, you know, DFS and stuff like that. Well, let's just read the tweet. Yeah. Taylor Mathis, I just had the nicest interaction with the UPS guy. He was dropping off boxes and he goes, "You look familiar." And I was like, I don't know. He says, "Are you Taylor? I follow you online. I love your betting content. Such a sweet man. Win for UPS." So, This is one of the greatest tweets of all time. I think.
It's pretty good.
This is so good.
So, I mean, this is like, this strikes me as something that didn't happen.
Yeah. There's two.
And also, if it did happen, there's 0% chance he didn't know who he's talking
to. Okay. Those are the only two outcomes. Those are the only two outcomes. Someone needs to tell Taylor that the UPS man delivering her the box.
She's just trying to flex.
It has her name on it. The process is someone comes up to your house and they go, "Are you Peter Overzet? This is for you." That's what.
I totally missed that part, actually.
You missed that. Okay. This is what I was saying is how did they not, you realize your name's on the fucking box, Taylor.
I will say this, Brian, I will be charitable and say it is possible that you recognize how Taylor looks, but don't remember her name. I bet a lot of people have that effect with her content.
Okay. Fair enough. Then. I guess see what you're doing there, but he did get to it. He did get to the, so it had to be either totally made up or the second thing where he's like, okay, let's see if I can pull my suave UPS delivery guy moves on this girl. And he's like, are you Taylor? But like, how does she not go? Yeah. The name's on the package, asshole.
The best part of this tweet by far are the last three words. Win for UPS. Like I'm imagining this world where there's just all of these just absolutely vile, horrible, horny, degenerate UPS men, and there's finally a good one who just recognizes Taylor from her sweet, innocent old sports betting content.
This is the question I've had for months and months about her on the show is, who is this guy? Who is this demographic that they keep telling me is actually using her bets? Like, who? And apparently it's UPS drivers. So if it's true, we found the guy.
We also apparently found the one piece of Taylor Mathis content that doesn't involve a selfie or an image or a video of some sort. I didn't even know these text posts from her existed without complimentary media.
DP might be the reason why.
I don't know. It's like bless this woman, man. She's she's not self-aware enough to do what she's doing. That's all.
I also definitely think her rug pull was completely just she had no idea what a meme coin was or how to do anything. She just thought she was probably getting paid.
Also, I love this first reply. So this guy, Elf, he's been hosting. I've gotten tagged about him. He's been hosting these like sports betting. And I know you got to go here, Brian. These sports betting like spaces on Twitter. Like, he's the one who had Cash Out King on. And I guess he's been getting these, you know, touts and stuff to go at each other. But this is the most simp reply I've ever seen. That's crazy. Face, do you get recognized in public a lot?
He wants her on his show, Pete.
Yeah. He already had her on his show.
I know. I think I've seen him as well, and he's very like amiable on and you know, because he's trying to get these people to come back and keep doing his where they have these controversial back and forths and stuff. I think it's that more than simping, considering what BP said. She's pregnant. So congrats to T Matt. Someone in our Discord is taking credit for that. I don't know if I believe him, but that's the rumor.
I promise you, no one in the in-game syndicate is taking credit.
It was actually the Lulz forum, the Lulz Discord.
Okay, maybe. I will just say, Brian, I was close to giving you a Lulz suspension. I swear to God, the next time you give me a Taylor Mathis tweet, it better have something here to keep the viewers watching on screen. That was a big miss on your part.
Will do. Yeah, you can't screen cap. You can't put that on the thumbnail.
No. Yuta, what do you want people to check out other than in-game syndicate? You working on any other videos that they can look forward to here?
No, just check out the site. And I guess we didn't really touch on it, but I'm looking to make my own MLB projections. It'll be an add-on, likely. And it's not going to come with any of our own tools, so you have to know what to do with them from there. But I'm going to be trying to put out projections that I myself will be using, and you'd be able to confirm that pretty easily. Hopefully my opponents are not listening. And that's up and coming. We're trying to build that out as soon as possible. I don't know if we can get it in before the season start, but hopefully at least early into the MLB season.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, highly recommend it. Like I said, not only getting all of that awesome, you know, video archive content with your sub, but the Utical War Room channel in the server is a very fun one there as well. Anything else for you, Brian?
The draft caddy should be updated soon enough, hopefully sooner than later, with all the new GPPs or whatever, Pete, with the combo data, and then we're working on some run the sin stuff. Hopefully soon. Yeah. There'll be some new stuff.
Beautiful. Thank you all for hanging out in the chat. If you are new here, we roll every Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern live. You can also check this on the audio feed. Just search Lulz in your podcast of choice, and you will find us. Thanks again to Yuta, the chat, Brick. I'm Pete. We'll see you guys next time on Lulz.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.